morning. Thank you, Pastor. Great to be here this morning. Great to be with you all. And thank you for having me. I count it a real privilege to be here this morning and a blessing to be with you guys. Even before I start and jump into what I had prepared, I was so struck by how great that worship time was. Thank you, worship team. There is a deep well of the presence of God here. And it's a beautiful thing to come into and to come under. And I know that that takes years and faithfulness to generate. And so I'm so grateful for a faithful community in this house. And I was so struck just by the tenderness of Jesus in that moment. And I was reminded of Revelation 1. And in Revelation 1, we have this picture of Jesus. And he comes and he talks to John. And it says in verse 12 that John turns to see who spoke to him. And what it says he saw was lampstands. And those lampstands are the churches. It explains that to us later. But what I want you to catch just for a moment is that in the book called The Revelation of Jesus Christ, when John first hears Jesus and turns to see Jesus, the thing he sees is the church. The very first thing Jesus wants to show him is actually the church, where Jesus resides, where Jesus would be found walking among the lampstands. And I felt this morning just that sweet tenderness of Jesus's joy in being found in your church here at GCC. And I wanted to just share that with you as a little off-the-cuff encouragement. So bless you guys. Well, yes, my name is Daniel. I have an amazing wife and a beautiful daughter. I've got a family photo that's hopefully going to pop up in a moment. And they're just out in the back at the mum's room at the moment. There it is. That's us at the beach. And we are, as mentioned, part of a church from lands far away, south of the river in Fremantle. I know it's a long way for north of the river to south of the river and back. But part of a church, New Life Church, not too dissimilar in size and style to this one. And so I feel very at home here. And it's my privilege to be, a pastor's kid for parents who were missionaries' kids and continuing the work. And my wife serves as a worship leader in the church. I do a handful of all sorts. I can't sing that great, but I can run a sound desk and I can run screens and I get to preach and share in a handful of churches across the city. I'm still a youth leader and that's one of my great joys on a Friday night. And I'll talk about that photo in just a second. So if you want to go back one slide and then we'll come to this one. And since finishing school, I've served God in a bunch of different capacities. I'm a graduate of Curtin University and I spent about nearly 10 years in financial advice before a little career pivot, thanks to someone in your church, led me into the last 3 years of recruitment and executive search. And in all of that time, I haven't worked full-time in terms of a five-day, nine-to-five since I was 17. When I was 17, I was a laborer. I used to break concrete with a large drill. It was very painful, it was very slow, but I did it. And part of my journey in Jesus has been sacrificing, if you will, the fifth day of my week and giving it as an offering to God. And it's just so worked out that I've been able to keep doing that. As I've pivoted careers, as I've changed job, God has kept a door open for me. And I don't know how long that will continue for. It may be permanent. But it is my joy to spend that fifth day in prayer, in worship, in study of the word, in serving my local community. We also have a school. I'm the treasurer on the board. And so I just get to do a bunch of great activities with God. And so it's a real privilege to serve him. It's a real privilege to be part of a family that serves him. And it's a real privilege to be here this morning with you guys. So as I was praying for you and preparing this morning, I felt a really clear encouragement from the Lord from John 15. So I'm going to pray, and then we're going to start talking about John 15. And that's my little girl chirping in the background. Don't mind her. She's very cute, though, so you can look at her and smile. It's okay.
So God, this morning we're so grateful that you are in the room. We're so grateful that you are the one who walks among the lampstands and you are walking in this room right now. And Jesus, I ask that you would release light and life this morning. That you would take the weak words that I speak and put your eternal power in them. That it would bring forth life in this community. That it would bring forth the work of your Spirit in this community. God, do what I cannot do and bring eternal life this morning. We ask for your presence. We ask for your nearness. We ask for the breaking in of heaven on earth this morning. Amen. So we're talking John 15 this morning, and if you have your Bible, it's probably a good time to kind of open to that. It's a fairly familiar passage, but I want to jump into the context really quickly, which is actually John 13 through 17. And in John 13 through 17, it is Jesus' final night. So John 13 starts with the foot washing at the Last Supper, and John 17 takes us through to Jesus' high priestly prayer in the garden, where he's praying for the unity of the church to come, and then we flow into kind of 18 and 19 into the crucifixion. And so we have in this little section of 13 through 17, the young disciples who have been following Jesus, led by the hand, shown where to go, taught, you know, intimately with all of the kind of secret things. When they didn't understand a parable, they could just come to him and go, Jesus, what was that? And Jesus, how did you do that? And Jesus, show us. They're about to have no Jesus to go to. They're about to graduate, if you will, from their 3 years of schooling and education. And this conversation that takes place in John 13 through 17 is one of Jesus' most beautiful conversations. And there is so much in there that we can find encouragement from ourselves today. So if you are finishing a Bible plan or you want to start a new one, you would do well to take a few months and sit in John 13 through 17. It is one of my favorite sections of Scripture. And in there we find Jesus gives a bunch of analogies and different stories to explain to them what it's going to be like when he goes. And one of them is the vine. And as I was feeling from the Lord that this was the message for you guys this morning, I actually realized I don't know much about viticulture or the growing of vines. So I went and did my research. Hence, I have this wonderful photo of me sitting in front of a vineyard. Went and chatted to the people out in the Swan Valley, and I said, tell me about your vines. And they gave me some really, really cool insights. And so the next slide is actually the anatomy of a vine. And it's important to understand for a moment, basically you have this giant T-shape in the middle. And then off the top of that, you've got these little bits that are growing. And so in this passage, when Jesus refers to himself as the vine, he is referring to the T-shape. And then the parts that are growing off that, he refers to as the branches. It's just a really simple analogy. There's some 20-odd parts. I found the most basic picture I could. But for our understanding of what Jesus is trying to articulate to his disciples, it's basically T-shape and new growth, vine and branches. So a couple of things, we can leave that up for the moment, but a couple of things that I thought were really interesting and really handy to know about vines that have cool parallels, but I don't have heaps of time to dig into them. If you take a vine from kind of birth and you want it to grow and bear fruit, it will take you roughly 4 years. It will bear you a full harvest of fruit in the fourth year. The first one it grows up, the second one it grows out, the third one you get little bits of fruit that you should just cut off and prune back, and the fourth year you get the harvest. So it's no surprise to me that as Jesus is leaving his disciples in their fourth year of ministry, he begins talking to them about grapes and fruit. You'll also find that vines produce fruit only on new growth. So in, again, our analogy here, the T-shape is basically dead wood. It's just wood. There's no life in there. But the life flows through it into the branches. And the branches are where the new growth is. Almost like something had to go before it and die that it would create the strength for the new branches. So as Jesus goes before the disciples and dies, he creates the strength that will produce fruit in their lives and our lives. And the last one is that to this very day, vine dressers still use blades for pruning. It is an entirely manual task. There is no machinery, there is no AI yet. I'm sure we'll get there, but nothing can do the job better because of the specific decisions and care required, and because each vine is different to the one next to it. So it is still a manual task done by hand and will be for many years yet, because no one's even close to developing a software that can analyze and understand what's going on in that vineyard. All right, so with some context and background, let's jump in and read John 15, 1 through 17. Jesus says, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit, for apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers, and the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. By this, my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask my Father, the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you, so that you will love one another." So breaking it down into kind of a simple overview in this passage, we have Jesus, the true vine, we have our Father, the great vine dresser, and we have the branches that produce fruit. That's us. And fairly obviously, you know, Jesus would say, without the vine, you don't get the fruit. You know, without me, you can do nothing. Fairly obvious statement. But the vine is the part that produces the nourishment. The vine is what connects all of the good things in the ground into those new shoots of life. And without the vine, you will not have the fruit. And the good news about Jesus being the vine is that no matter what you think about your life, Jesus believes that if you are connected to him, he is able to fill you with his life and bear beautiful fruit in your life. And has it ever occurred to you that if Jesus calls himself the true vine, there must be some false vines? Let's go back one slide still. I'll come to that one in a sec. If Jesus is the true vine, there must be false vines. And how many of you know that in your life, there are things you can connect yourself to? There are things you can plug yourself into? There are bad activities you can do? There are kind of neutral activities you can do that bring no nourishment into your life. There are things you can waste your time on that will not put the life of God inside of you. And there are wonderful things you can give your life to that will put the life of God inside of you. So it makes sense to me that he would want to prune away the things that don't bear fruit to put in our lives the things that do. I wonder if, as Jesus is giving this analogy, he's walking past a vineyard and he's contrasting two vines, the one on his left or his right, but one that has a strong vine producing much fruit, and one that has a weak vine and is producing no fruit, or worse, half-formed and now rotting fruit that it's unable to bring to fulfillment. Just a thought. So Jesus is our vine, and our Father is the vine dresser. Now, I've read this passage many, many times, and I often overlook this sentence. I'm not really sure why. I think I get afraid of the concept of pruning, and I just try and run through the passage a little bit sometimes. But our Father is the vine dresser is one of the coolest facts in this verse. I thought a vine dresser was sort of like the owner who kind of had a little bit to do with the vines, but not much, and maybe kind of picked the fruit and ate it and wanted his vineyard to come to fruitfulness. But I've realized the vine dresser is the one who is intimately involved with every vine. The vine dresser is the one who is ultimately responsible for the healthy growth of the vine. The vine dresser has to take care of each plant, nurturing it to grow in the right directions so that one vine doesn't grow into another, making sure there's enough sunlight that gets onto the vine, making sure there's enough airflow, making sure the water is irrigating the plant properly. The vine dresser is actually the one who is most responsible for the fruit. They have to keep that fruit off the ground so that it doesn't burn or spoil in the sun. They have to keep it away from the pests so that it doesn't get eaten. And more than that, the highest quality vine dressers are able to bring consistent fruit from the entire vineyard. The acres and acres of vine, they want a consistent fruit so that the one that's a kilometer that way and the one that's right here bear the same fruit, so that when you mix it to create wine or you sell it at a market, you can sell all of them because they're consistent, beautifully nurtured to bring forth equal fruit. The vine dresser is intimately involved. He knows the landscape that he's working in. He's involved with every plant, ultimately for his own glory. I don't know if you've ever drunk a nice bottle of wine and thought, wow, great vines. Most of us drink a nice bottle of wine and we think, wow, great Vas Felix, or whatever choice of wine it is that you like. And we recognize that someone's put a lot of effort into these vines to produce the fruit. The vines don't do it by themselves. So it is with us. But our vine dresser is not a human who makes mistakes. Our vine dresser is never going to sleep in and forget harvest time. Our vine dresser is never going to accidentally prune too much. Our vine dresser knows us. Our vine dresser knows exactly how much fruit we can bring all the way through to harvest. Our vine dresser knows exactly how much water we need so that there would be an abundant harvest in our lives. And that's what he is looking for each one of us. No matter what season you're in right now or what it feels like, you have a vine dresser who is committed to bringing forth fruit in your life for his glory. If we can go to that next slide now. On the left, you have a beautiful crop. And on the right, you have what happens when the vine dresser sleeps for a couple of years. On that right-hand side, it's spindly, it's nasty, it is useless, and it's actually started to destroy the fences. But on the left-hand side, you have beautiful fruit. God is working in your life to produce beautiful fruit. And part three, we are the branches. God has so designed it that we would be the ones who get to go forth and bear fruit. In Jesus' own ministry, he sends forth the disciples to bear fruit. He himself would say, unless a head of grain, unless it falls into the ground and dies and becomes a seed, it will not bring forth fruit. And so Jesus sends his own life into the ground that through his resurrection there would be fruit in our lives. We have this glorious promise and privilege that he wants to bring forth fruit in us. And what does that fruit look like? Well, it's the fruit of redemption and restoration. It's the fruit of lives transformed, the fruit of humility and forgiveness, the fruit of our neighbors being loved, the fruit of our work done as unto the Lord, the fruit of glorious good works in our lives that bring glory to our Creator, that bring glory to our vine dresser. So then, what does that mean for us? It means the secateurs are coming. The pruning is coming to our lives. He promises both the fruitful and the unfruitful secateurs are coming. To the fruitful ones, it's that glorious promise that every branch that bears fruit, he will prune that it may bear more fruit. And there are two reasons for this. If you've ever looked at the vines, what happens is you will have a branch that grows out and starts to bear fruit in this direction. But the branch doesn't know to stop growing. So it will keep producing wood, and then it will try and set out another one, and there will be no fruit on this part of the vine. A good vine dresser will prune that and cut that out. Because what's happening is the branch is starting to divide its energy between fruitful and fruitless activities. And so the vine dresser comes along and he cuts that part off, that it might bear more fruit. Because if you leave it and the vine doesn't put the right amount of energy into the fruit producing works, you can lose the whole harvest. The second reason is that basically what happens to vines when they're done, when they've fruited and you harvest them, you end up with about 3 feet of what they call a cane, which is the branch, and it just dies and it becomes wood. And it's not strong like the T-shape. It's kind of long. And if you just leave it there, it's not strong enough to produce anything the following year. The vine will try and it will just damage itself. So you come along at the end of the season and you prune that the vine becomes stronger and the new growth the following year is better. And for the fruitless, the secateurs are coming in. They're going to be cut off and thrown away like branches into the fire. And that can sound super harsh, and we need to heed that warning. We need to be looking at our lives and assessing what things are just going to be thrown in the fire. But I also want you to realize that those branches, as I've just mentioned, will die. And if you leave a fruitless branch there, it will rob the rest of the fruitful activities going on that branch. And when you cut it off, it becomes dead wood. The last remaining purpose for dead wood is a fire. So it is a serious warning, but it's also the agricultural reality of vine growing. And for us, this can apply to so many areas in our lives, you know, where the Lord prunes us and cuts things back. And the cry of my life is that I don't want to get to the end and find I was wasting energy on fruitless branches. I don't want to get to some point in my life where I realize I've spent 10 years on a fruitless activity, investing in a fruitless relationship, working in somewhere God hasn't called me to be because I thought it was a better whatever. I want to bear the fruit that He has appointed me to bear. I want to entrust my life to that vine dresser and let Him bring the secateurs and cut off the things that don't bear fruit. So the question becomes, how do we be the fruitful ones? And I think for a second, how does the world tell me to be fruitful? What's the message I hear every day out there about being fruitful? Careers, investments, no mortgages, fun events, wine and dine. And then if I ask myself the question, putting it back into the context of Jesus, what would your advice be to the disciples? These 11, because Judas is gone, these 11 you're standing in front of are about to be the entire representation of Jesus on the earth. They're about to be the witnesses carrying the most important global message in history. What would your advice be to them? Imagine they come to you and say, how do we be fruitful? How do the 11 of us bear the fruit God's appointed us to bear? The crazy thing to me is that Jesus' answer is in verse 4. Abide in me and I in you. The branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine. And verse 5, whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Jesus goes on to say that if we bear much fruit in verse 8, we will prove that we were his disciples. He continues to say that we bear the fruit that remains seeing answered prayers in our lives, verse 16. And to me, this seems way too simplistic. It actually seems to me like bad advice. I mean, I'm a strategy kind of guy, and I'm going, Jesus, where's the strategy? Jesus, where's their five-step plan of how to bear fruit? Don't you understand, Jesus? This is the most important message in the world. We need this gospel to go viral. And your advice is just abide in me, the dead guy soon. It's as if Jesus believes that in every circumstance, no matter the stakes, the most vital activity in your life and my life is abiding in him. It's almost like Jesus is fully convinced that you have a good vine dresser. And so if you're just connected to that good vine, fruit will come forth in your life in every area. Do you agree with Jesus? Can we trust the vine dresser to shape us, to prune us, to mold us, that we would bring forth fruit and life in our lives and in this church? Abiding in Jesus is something that my wife and I, Gracia and I, are growing in more and more, especially in our marriage together. We spend Wednesday evenings and Friday mornings in our church in Fremantle. We have a place called the prayer room. Just think of it as this, but a third the size. And we choose to go there for 5 to 7 hours a week and sit with Jesus and sit with his word and try and keep Alora still and under control so she doesn't disrupt anyone else. And as we grow in him, as we abide in him, we're finding fruitfulness in our work, more fruit in our marriage. We're finding that as we keep putting him at the center and just deep connection with him, it's actually just time sitting with the word and talking to him. Or my wife sings and plays, so she often does a little devotional set for an hour. We're finding fruit in every area. We're finding our appetite for entertainment and the things of the kind of trivial and I would say fruitless keeps falling more and more. We're changing the relationships we're investing into. Our connection to the vine is starting to change everything in our lives, and more fruit is coming from it. As we submit to the vine dresser and his secateurs, what do you know? We're seeing more and more growth. So from the passage, what does it actually mean to abide in Jesus? If we jump to chapter 14 for a moment, and I've got a handful of verses that are going to come up. Chapter 14, verse 15, Jesus says this, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." 14:21, "Whoever has my commandments and keeps them, he it is who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him." 14:23, Jesus answered him, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him." 14:24, "Whoever does not love me does not keep my words." And 15:10, "If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love." The theme is clear that abiding in Jesus is directly linked to hearing his voice, having his commandments, and keeping them. Being in communion with Jesus with no disunity, aligning our hearts to his so that we experience his love, and he and the Father are more and more at home in our hearts. What Jesus is looking for is a people that spend time with him in order to understand his ways, to hear his voice, his commands, to seek his guidance and wisdom, hearing his rebuke and encouragement. He genuinely believes the way for his disciples and the church as a whole to bear much fruit is to hear and obey him. Each of us need that refreshing in his presence and in his word. It's why pruning is so important in our lives. When our hearts and lives get cluttered with so much stuff, we lose the ability to sit in the stillness and hear his voice. When we're so used to so much quick information, quick entertainment, quick games, it's hard to slow down, to take a 10-minute, hour-long, two-hour-long moment with Jesus and hear his voice and join with him. When we lose the presence of God at the center of it all, we actually miss the Genesis to Revelation message of the Bible. From the very start, he made a garden where he wanted to dwell with you. When that didn't work, he stayed with his people, carried them through until Moses, and Moses made a tabernacle, and at the center of Israel, there was a tent and an ark and the glory of God. We fast forward to David, and they build through Solomon, they build the temple where God always wanted to be, right in the middle. And when you look to the very end in Revelation, we see it there again. Behold, the tabernacle of God will be with man. He will be our God. We will be his people. Pruning is the great reminder that realigns us back to Jesus. And if you're not sure where... Have I got him? Oh, I'm back. Yes. And if you're not sure where pruning is taking place in your life, the easiest place to start is where you're feeling the pain. Pain is the very first indicator that Jesus is wanting to have a conversation with us. And it can be one of the hardest things to do, to sit with Jesus in the stillness when he's screaming at us. And I may have dead batteries, batteries. Should I switch to a handheld? It can be one of the hardest things to do, to sit with our pain still before Jesus while that pain screams at us, that thing that we're wanting God to do that he hasn't done yet, that pain in our families, that pain in our workplace. But trust me, if you do, he will meet you there. And GCC, I want to tell you this morning, God has called you
I felt so clearly, verse 16, for you as a church, as I was preparing this message, that God has chosen you, the people of this church. He has appointed you that you should go forth, bear fruit, and your fruit should remain. I believe you've been fruitful. I believe this church has been fruitful, and I can see it in the room. It's been my experience this morning of seeing the fruit. And yet, there remains a further promise for you, that more fruit is coming as you abide in the vine, as you commune with Him. My sense was this: it's time for you to arise into new levels of wholeheartedness, time to arise into new levels of obedience and surrender, time to arise into new levels of abiding in Him, that the life of the vine would flow through you, that with the blessed help of the best vine dresser there is, there would be an abundant harvest of fruit in the season to come. I also believe that the next generation is arising in this church. And if you're part of that next generation, this is a good place for you to sow your life. This is a good house for you to trust God, draw near to Him, and He will bring about fruit in your life. And as you transition, I know there's transition going on. I've been having that conversation with Pastor Stewart. You need strategy. You need wisdom. You need a good process. But nothing will bear more fruit than a church that abides in Him. The strategy won't come close. The mission and vision statement, I love them. They're helpful as anything, but they won't come close. Knowing Jesus, walking with Jesus, talking with Jesus will win every time, hands down. May Jesus find a people in this house that He calls a resting place. May Jesus find a people in this house where He and the Father say, I'm home. So what does that next step look like for you? As I come to a close, and I don't know if the worship team want to come back up. For some of you, that next step can be learning to sit with Jesus. Read His word and hear His words. For some of you, it's finally time to let go of that sin you've been holding on to. That sin you've been saying, it's okay. Those thoughts that you've been entertaining. For some of you, it's time for a deeper surrender of saying yes to that thing God is calling you to. Because let me tell you now, the new season of fruitfulness requires new levels of surrender. Whatever it is, make no mistake that Jesus and our Father want to make their home in your heart. They want all of you fully surrendered to the vine dresser because they want to bear the fruit for which you've been appointed. And the last thought I want to leave you with is the words of Psalm 95, and they should come up on the screen. Come, let us bow down in worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker, for He is our God. And we are the people of His pasture, the flock under His care. Today, if you would only hear His voice. Let us be a people who abide in Him and bear much fruit. Let me pray for you. Father, this morning, we thank you that you are the good vine dresser. We thank you that you know every single branch on every single vine. That Father, you know the pain, You know the struggles. You know the areas of doubt and frustration. You know the areas we wish were different. And you're calling us to abide in you. In the midst of our pain, in the midst of difficult circumstances, you're calling us to abide in you. To trust the secateurs of our vine dresser, because he's committed to bringing forth fruit in our lives that glorify him. That people would look at us and say, look what God has done in their lives. Look at the fruit in their marriage, in their family, in their workplace. Look at the fruitful harvest God has brought about. So Holy Spirit, I ask right now you would release the conviction we need. That blessed gift of the conviction of sin. To highlight the hidden areas, God. Those things we don't even know are spoiling the vines, spoiling the fruit. God, that we would surrender again to the hand of the vine dresser and say, you know, and I can trust you. You know, and I can give you everything. You will take care of my life as I entrust it to you. As I keep moving forward, as I keep putting my trust in you and one foot in front of the other, you will bring about the glorious fruit in my life. And Jesus, it's my prayer for GCC in this season that they would grow from strength to strength. I call forth that next generation to carry this church for another 30 years because it's a fruit-bearing church. Because Jesus is proud to be seen here at GCC. Because there is much fruit in this place. And Father, you want to bring more fruit. You're declaring a more fruitful season in the next season than what's been in the past. So God, we just say thank you. Thank you for caring for us. Thank you for loving us. Thank you for never leaving us. Thank you for never sleeping in. Thank you for always watching over us. Thank you for being with us. Every step. We love you. We praise you. We sing your praises this morning. Amen.